You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, here we are on a Thursday evening, and we're all sitting here staring at each other, saying, "Who?" With our eyes, yes. Who's going to talk? It was like we were playing a game of the mind, and no one knew what first card to play.
Yeah, so normally we discuss who's going to do an interesting intro for the show, but I only just got here from work, and evidently you two haven't discussed it.
No. So let's make one up on the fly.
Woohoo! Like this, some sort of impro.
Exactly.
Some sort of behind the curtain, behind the scene of the wizardry that we do.
Well, you know, it is episode 223.
Yeah.
And it is the 2nd of August, Thursday, here on a very cold Hobart night.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just saying to Leon, actually, as we sat in the studio, that watching a little bit of Netflix, I have been, because I've finished up from my old job a couple of days ago.
Retirement. Mark has retired, everybody.
I wish.
For the next week and a half, he's living the life of a house husband.
Anyway, I was catching up a new season of Happy Valley, which is a BBC cop show sort of set in the outer... feels like it's in an area that's outside a big city.
Okay.
And
is that relevant?
No, not really.
Cool.
But the thing that was relevant, it's a very good show, actually. Only like 6 episodes in a season, if you like a BBC cop drama. But there was a scene where a young man and his nephew were playing a board game at a table, just sort of abstractly. And I looked down, and it was King of Tokyo.
Well, there you go.
A real game.
Wow.
On a real TV show.
And as soon as you told me that, instantly I went, cool. And I went, hang on. Two-player King of Tokyo.
That's so funny. That was my first thought. Was not the best choice for a two-player game.
No.
I remember very quickly and very boringly the movie Charlie's Angels. There's a scene where Drew Barrymore falls naked down a hill and they show children inside playing a video game and see her outside the window. There's two people playing with two controllers and it's Final Fantasy VIII, one of my favourite games ever, which is a 50-hour single-player game. Yeah, so as soon as I saw it, I went, Mummy, looked at the... Hang on a tick!
Yes.
Went straight away, grabbed my second controller, plugged in and went... Oh, almost could have had friends, but didn't. That's why I was watching Charlie's Angel with my mum.
Bombshell.
Yeah.
What are we talking about this week? Well, we're talking about wine. And that's W-I-N-E, not W-H-I-N-E.
Can we do some of the other stuff later, though?
Yeah, we'll do some of that as well. And cool. Then, Leon, because you have been sick and you missed us last week, you wanted to talk about Gen Con, because you're excited about Gen Con, because Gen Con's coming up and it's going to be Gen Con and we're more Gen Can't.
Yes, I'm excited because I've got that FOMO thing
that
kids talk about, because we know a solid dozen other good Aussie friends that don't have a popular radio show that are there at the moment. But we're here because we're good, solid workers. Mm.
And then should we have time for that? And this all depends how much we rabbit on about stuff. Mark is going to talk a little bit of, I'll say iOS, but you're going to say Android gaming, aren't you?
Android OS,
yeah. But before we get to that, thanks Area 52 as always for your continued support. We are the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And here is a song.
That was Jack Johnson with Gone on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Proudly brought to you this week by our good friends at Area 52. Go in there. They have all the shiny, colourful things, the comical books, the board games, and the cards that are playing and all that kind of jazz. Now, lads, I've been playing...
I don't think they have jazz. They have books about jazz.
I think all the jazz is gone.
They have lots of stuff. Who knows? I've played nothing of late because I've been sick as a dog
since
I come back from Melbourne.
I should lend you my copy of A Dog's Life then.
Oh.
And you can play the game about being a dog that we have not talked about on air.
It's a hard dog's life for us.
Anyway, so you guys are about to talk about a game that I haven't played. So... to keep myself occupied, because I'm clearly not going to listen, because if it's not the sound of my own voice, I'm just, like most of our listeners, why would you bother? So I'm actually going to do something rather odd, and I'm going to give out our text line here at Edge Radio, something that for some reason we just never get around to doing. So if you're listening to us live, the number is 0488 11 707. That is 0488 11 707. And what I'd like to ask you is, anything for me, anything for Leon to keep me occupied while these two talk about a game that I haven't played yet, although it does sound interesting, so I might listen if you give me a good opening spiel at the start.
And if you are not listening live, still feel free to send in a text, because whichever show is going to be on when they receive the text, it'll just mix it up a little bit.
Just say Leon said to send in something and to keep you occupied. And who knows what radio gold might ensue. So, lads, I've rambled on enough. I'll be quiet now. What have you been playing?
Excellent. So,
Garth,
a little while ago, Mark, you had the joy, the privilege of interviewing Jamie Stegmeyer of Stonemeyer Games. Now, during that conversation, I guess, in which you just did typical fanboy, said how everything he does is amazing and should be turned into gold
I get a bit excited.
Yeah, a little bit excited, which is great, because he's obviously done a couple of crazy good games and incredibly successful Kickstarters. I guess the long version of that is that we now found ourselves with a copy of Viticulture Essential Edition.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie.
Exactly.
And Stonemeyer Games.
So we thought we should play that really, really quickly, and we should talk about it really quickly, because that's what we do. We receive games from publishers and designers, and we talk about them because that's the gig we're in.
Yeah.
So Viticulture Essential is another edition of what was previously known as Viticulture. But what Viticulture is, are players playing the role in rustic pre-modern Tuscany who have inherited very meagre vineyards.
Ooh.
Now, Leon, vineyards are where you grow grapes. And the plan is that you will turn those grapes ultimately into not just white and not just red and not just red and white and blush, but also red and white and blush and sparkling wines.
Oh, I saw a lot of these vineyards when I was in Italy the other year.
There you go.
Did you go to Tuscany?
No, I was on a lovely train journey between my two destinations that I didn't enjoy at all, but the train journey showed all lovely places that I should have gone to instead of the destinations I went to.
So, look, this game by Jamie, and it does credit a couple of other designers in the Essential Edition purely because there are some, I guess, minor additions to this edition that the base game didn't have. It also has a couple of rules tweaks and simplifications just to make things a little bit more straight.
A quick Google into what the different editions of this game. Oh, it's a lovely little field of landmines. The definitive edition, is it the enhanced, but the normal? Oh, God.
Yeah, plus there's other standalone expansions that you can stick in there as well. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it is Jamie Stegmeyer, it is Stonemeyer Games. It plays from one with the Automata deck to six players. And we'll no doubt talk about the scaling process on this, but it also comes with a double-sided board.
One of the designers, you know, is Alan Stone.
I do know Alan Stone.
Which is where the stone came from, Stonemeyer Games.
Correct. But anyway, what is this game all about? Well, look, it's a pretty light to medium weight worker placement game. Each player will have their own individual player board, where their player board is their winery. They'll have three fields that they can grow grapes on. They'll have some crush pads where they're going to be crushing those grapes, really crushing those grapes into wine. You've then got some cellars. You've got a whole bunch of buildings, which they're not built yet, but you've got the ability to build them, and that's where you'll all start. Now, part of the Essential Edition is it includes the Mama and the Papa cards, which just means everyone's going to have a slightly more randomised setup. Each player gets a Mama and a Papa. You reveal them, you get the stuff. You get your grand big old worker, plus a couple of smaller ones. You'll get some money, and you might, depending on the choices that you make on those cards, start with a couple of structures. And that can be important because of reasons. Now, that's the setup. Then the game is very simply played out over the four seasons of the year, spring and summer. It's called fall, it's not called autumn, and then winter. Spring is the simplest season of all, and I'm pretty sure we all agree with that, full stop. In gaming terms, it's even easier, because all you're going to be doing is starting with the first player. You're going to choose how early you want to wake up in the morning. It's very simply got a line down the bottom left-hand corner of the board, starts at a 1, goes all the way down to 7, and you'll take your rooster meeple and you'll choose whereabouts you want to be, what the turn order is. And number one, the benefit is you go first. If you go for number 2 down through to 7, you'll get your position, but you'll also get an immediate benefit. You might get a plant card, which are grapes. You might get a visitor card, be it summer or winter. You might get a victory point. You might get a gold coin. Or if you choose to just sleep in as long as you possibly can and take that 7th position, you'll also get the temporary worker, which is just this grey meeple who's going to give you one more action through the turn. And that's very, very important, especially earlier on in the game.
Oh, yes.
Because generally everyone's only going to start with three workers. One of them is a grande, big worker, and he's a special. They're a special. She's a special. Doesn't matter what the sex of your meeple is. You'll have two standard workers and one bigger worker, and that will become important because there might be something you want to do, but there's no more spaces to do it, and that worker will become important.
So you're trying to tell me that you can sleep in as late as you want, and then you get to do extra things.
Correct.
Because that, well, that's a horrible lesson
you
to teach
to
younger
people. You get to do extra things, but you're doing it last.
Right.
You know what I think thematically, what it might be, because your worker is grey. Mm. Maybe it's your grandfather who comes along and goes, come on, Lazybones, get out of the bed. You got to come and do some jobs in the vineyard, eh? And then,
you sounded like Watto then.
I thought that was... I thought
you got your chance, cube.
Oh, I thought that impression was quite good until the... at the end. Oh, brilliant.
And then your grandfather, like, maybe helps you out around the vineyard before he goes home to his house down the road.
And if you do take that position, you also get a special stick in the game that your next-door neighbour player can get, and they just whack you in the back of the head every few turns.
So that's spring. Spring determines player order. You'll then start summer, and summer is where you will start to use half the board. Because this board, being a worker placement board, you're going to place your workers on it doing the various actions. However, you can only do the summer actions, which is half the board, because the other half is the winter actions.
Mm.
You don't even worry about those yet, but you've got to worry about summer. So the actions that you'll be able to take, you might want to play some of your visitor cards, which some people might start with, but you'll certainly get them as the game progresses, and they're basically allowing you to get a benefit, and the benefit might be some grapes or planting some cards or victory points or stuffing around the opponents, something like that, and we'll get to that. You get to draw some plants, i.e. the grapes that you're going to plant in your vines, in your fields, sorry, which you'll ultimately be turning into grapes. That could be really important. You might want to do a tour of your fledgling vineyard to try and generate a bit of extra income, because that's very, very important. You might actually want to plant some grapes. So you can actually do that as an action. You can put some grapes into your fields and hope that they're going to grow. Or you can start to build a structure. And that's very, very simple. You put your worker on that spot, you pay your money for the structure, and then you build it onto your own little player board. Now, the reason structures are important, starting with the trellis and irrigation structures, you might actually need those,
yes,
to be able to plant certain varieties of grapes into your field. So you might find you've got this big, juicy grape card in your hand, but you haven't got a trellis or an irrigation to be able to actually play it. And that can be really, really frustrating. Or you might find you want to plant a windmill. Build a windmill, which will allow you to get one victory point per year when you plant vines. One victory point per year doesn't sound like much, but you have to remember that this game will trigger the end of round and end of game when someone gets to 20 VPs, yeah, which is not a huge amount.
No.
You might want to do your tasting room. Tasting room means that when you do a tour to gain some income, as long as you've got some wine in your cellar, you'll get a VP as well. So there's another one VP per year that you get just for having a tasting room. You might have a cottage, so that people can stay there for longer, and that will allow you during various, at fall or autumn, to get an extra visitor into your vineyard, meaning an extra card, which can be really, really important. Or you've got your yoke. Now, the yoke is super duper important because that creates a whole new space that your worker and your worker alone can go on,
yes,
whenever they want to be able to either uproot a field, which takes the plants out and start from scratch, or harvest, and more importantly, I think the harvest element is the very, very powerful part of that position.
Why is it called a yoke? What's eggs, Mark, got to do with the wine?
There's an E at the end.
Yeah, it's like a cart.
Yeah.
Ah. Like an ox cart.
Oh, a yoke.
Yeah. There we go, that's the one. Otherwise, you can build your medium and your large cellar, and you'll need that to get higher qualities of wine, and in fact, to upgrade from just your bog-standard reds and whites to your blushes and to your sparkling wines, which that's pretty important as well. So all of those are your summer actions, and you'll pretty quickly find that you're never going to have enough workers to do everything you want. The reason for that is that not only do you start with only three workers, or four if you've taken that long sleep in and got the temporary one, but those workers have got to see you through the whole year. So not only just for summer, but they've also got to see you through winter as well. And any workers that you've placed in the summer spots, they stay there till the end of the year. So when it comes to the winter season, you've got whatever's left.
Yeah.
And that can be very often in the first round or two, one action left maybe. Because after you've done your summer actions, you go into fall. Fall is very sick quickly. You get to draw either a summer, sorry, yes, a spring or an winter visitor.
A summer or a winter
summer visitor. Or winter visitor, yeah. Which is, again, you just draw a card. And then you go into winter, which are the winter actions, which are basically then the more productive ones because they're the ones that will allow you to harvest grapes. They're the ones that can turn grapes actually into wine.
Yeah.
They're the ones that will allow you
To fill grape orders.
Which
wine orders.
Kind of important.
Yeah.
And a few other things as well, primarily for me, playing a lot of cards because they allow you to play your winter guests. But it's quite a simple little process. Spring, choose your turn order. Summer, do the actions you need to do. Autumn, draw a card. Winter, do some more actions, all about getting some wine.
And Garth, don't forget, one of the most important actions in winter is where you train a new worker that you then get to use for next year and then on. And as we said, you only start with three, but you can have six in total.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for me, that's always a very important action because obviously the earlier you train those new workers, the longer in the game they're working.
Well, it's called the mini mark action because Mark always, this is a little tip for anyone who ever plays a worker placement game with Mark or a Euro, his decisions early on in the game will all be about how does he get more actions.
Yes.
So if you're playing viticulture and there's an option to block Mark from getting more actions, do it. Doesn't matter if it's detrimental to your own game, just do it.
So Mark slept in every game that you played then?
Oh, he did very, very much early on in the equation, yes, to get that extra worker. But the thing is, and this is where your big worker becomes important.
Yeah.
Because that big worker can go in any of the actions, even if the spaces are already filled. And in a 3-4 player game, there are two spots for every action. When you go up to 5 or 6, there are three spots. So it can get a bit tight. The big worker can go and just go plonk, create their own space, do the action. Happy days.
And I think, to me, that, so simple as it is, that is one of the things that's great about this game because you do face that frustration in a worker placement game where I'm in a vineyard, but I'm totally blocked out of making wine.
Correct.
For a whole year, what the hell am I going to do? You can always guarantee you can do at least one thing no matter where in the turn order you are because that worker can do the action regardless if it's filled. So that interesting decision of which of those one actions am I going to use my grand day worker for? And then thinking about, well, how early am I going to get my rooster out, should I get that extra worker or will I go higher in the turn track so I can get my action? Or maybe if I want to get two workers out in a turn, well, if I go early in the turn order, I can use a normal worker to make a new worker and then I can use my big worker to make another new worker.
That sounds like something exactly like I did.
It's almost like you've thought about that or played the game.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I'm hearing, which is a very good thing, is that since this game is a Euro game, all these actions you're talking about seem to make sense for what a winemaker would actually do in the real life for these seasons, which makes this game, by the sounds of it, very thematic, which is the biggest downfall of most Euro games, is that they are drier than a bad Pinot. I know nothing about wine. Can you get dry Pinots?
I don't know.
Do you have a dry Pinot, Garth?
I don't drink Pinot.
But don't ask Garth any personal questions.
So, look, this game plays in, it says on the box, 45 to 90 minutes, and obviously that's quite a big difference, but that's because it goes from 1 through to 6.
Yeah.
We played it on Tuesday night, 2 hours, I reckon, start to finish, with four players, and that was with Mark and I, who have played it once recently, but you've played it before.
Yeah.
Oren, who had played it once 100 years ago, and Aiden, who had never played it, and we're notoriously bad at keeping track of time because we sit and chat and have a few beers and all of that kind of thing. But the great thing is it moves at a clip.
Yes.
And because you've only got to get to 20 victory points, it's over bloody quickly as well. Now, I won, so that's great. However, the power of the cards that you get cannot be understated. Now, this is a game about producing wine, fulfilling orders, which gives you victory points. In this whole game, I filled precisely two orders. Now, the raw victory points I got from those was, I think, 8 or 9.
Right.
So I needed to get to at least 20 to trigger end of game. The rest of the points I got were from the visitor cards that I was able to play, and everyone remarked at the table how many cards I had. You only can ever have a hand limit of 7 at the end of the year. You've always got to go down to 7. But for the majority of the game, I probably had 6, 7 cards for the whole duration, and that just gave me so much flexibility because as far as the whole year go, I didn't feel compelled to go and sleep in during the spring phase because a lot of the benefits for getting further down is you'd get more cards. I had a fistful of those.
Yeah.
So I could go high up the turn order, and generally I was going first or second.
You seem to draw a lot of cards that then gave you access to more cards, which was a very nice synergy.
Exactly right. So because I was then at the top of the order, very rarely was I getting blocked out of the actions that I wanted to do. And what I haven't mentioned is that all of those actions that we've discussed, if you're the first player to do it, you'll get a bonus. So say, for example, I'm doing an action which is allowing me to play a visitor card. If I'm the first person there, instead of playing one, I get to play two. And that can be really important if you've got a really good combination of cards. Because, for example, my very first turn, I did exactly that. Played a visitor card that gave me $5 and gave everyone else $3, I think, but they'd have to lose a victory point. And then my second one was everyone else had to give me some money, otherwise they had a consequence as well. So
basically,
that was just
all the money we got we had to give you.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to ask about with this game is that I've heard this game has a very essential expansion, which is the Tuscany expansion, but that isn't involved in this edition of the game, is it?
No, it's not. It's still an expansion that you can add to this, but it's not included in this one. And that adds a couple of other artisanal products that you can sort of focus on as well. But no, the Tuscany expansion is not
part of the essential. Is it cheese as well you can do as well in the Tuscany expansion? Mm-hmm. So, well, from what I can tell, I'm going to spoil it. I'm assuming, based off the look on your both little smug little faces, that you both enjoyed this game. And as I just said, I've heard that that expansion is a near must for most people that have this game. So if you like just the base game, that expansion must make it, you know.
Well, the thing is, and I've not played the expansion, so I have no opinion of it whatsoever, but what I like about this game, and I do like it, is that it's simple.
Mm.
You can teach it and play it in 2 hours, and it's a worker placement game. It crams a lot of simple decision-making in there. There is never going to be a bad option for you, but definitely the combination of where in the turn order am I choosing to go, how early do I want to use my big worker because I need to do this. I need to get these grapes in the ground in the first half of the year so that I can harvest them in the second half of the year. How quickly do I need to get my irrigation and my trellis built up, or maybe even more importantly, my yoke, so that I can harvest in summer, which is really, really powerful. Because I can only then spend my winter basically turning grapes into wine and what have you.
And then the other thing you've got, obviously, which we haven't mentioned, is your grapes in your wine age.
They do.
Each year.
They get a little bit better.
But, of course, if you haven't invested in that sort of medium-sized cellar, your grapes aren't going to age past 3 years old or whatever it is.
Yeah, three quality.
So you've got to invest in that so then they can age because you get more points if you fill orders with higher or older wines.
Yep.
Lots of interesting decisions, and it's that sort of Euro where, you know, some of them you feel like you build this engine and then you run the engine for quite some time. This game you feel like you're just getting your engine starting to go, you know, get rid of a few bumps out of it and going slightly smoothly and the game is over.
Correct.
Which means you can never stop thinking about, what do I have to do now? What's the next step?
Exactly. And you will never build all the buildings that you can, full stop. It just will not happen.
Yeah.
You will never have enough wine to do everything that you want to do. And the reason for that is, it's pretty simple. You will grow red or white grapes. But if you want to make a blush, which is a combination of red or white, or a sparkling, a blush uses a red and a white wine to become one, and sparkling takes, I think, two reds and one white. Yeah. So you're growing all these grapes, which you're then mushing down into one wine instead of turning them into two red wines and one white wine.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of decision making, but it's all simple and it all happens really quickly. We did not have large chunks of analysis paralysis, which is awesome.
And look, for me, the only nitpicky thing that I can say about this game is, you know, when you look at those visitor cards in summer and winter, they can be very powerful.
I didn't find that.
there are, you know, you've got a good sized deck, and I think you've even got some extras in this game.
Yeah, I think there's 24 new ones.
Part of the Essential Edition. And you might get a card that gives you a free structure in the very first turn of the game, and you might be able to get that medium sized cellar or that the trellis or that.
Or the cottage, which will give you an extra card
exactly.
every season,
and
every round.
To get that card in the first round of the game is incredibly powerful. But because it's a deck of cards and they're going to come out in random orders, that card might not come out till the end of the game, and it's way less powerful.
Definitely.
So there is some random luck in those cards, but then there is opportunity to draw cards. A lot of cards, as we said, give you the option of more cards. So, look, it's nitpicky, as I said, you know, that some of the cards, there's no overpowered cards, but it's more, they can be more useful depending on when in the game they come
out. You're just jealous that I had lots of cards, aren't you?
You did. You.
So it's a game, there was wine, and it's good.
It is, yes.
Done.
Exactly right. Stick that on the box, Leon.
No worries.
Which is remarkable.
I would love if they brought out like a special super essential edition for this game and they did use the quote that I just used after you two prattled on for 20 minutes.
Because you're such an avid wine drinker.
Yeah, I've definitely drunk...
dry Pinots.
Yeah, I've had a dry Pinot in my day or two.
And look, you know, to use an alcohol but not wine metaphor, it's certainly the distillation of a lot of things that are in other work and placement games down into the essential elements of what make up a worker game, which is interesting decisions, but it doesn't take too long. It's not too brain-burny. Mm. And I think for me, and if you look at this, and if you look at Scythe, you know, that is a key skill that Jamie Stegmeier has, I think.
It's exactly what I was about to say. That's what Scythe is. Yeah. He looked at lots of different games like things like your Blood Rage and even like your Small World and stuff like that and kind of took elements of all those and mashed them together. He's clearly a very perceptive geezer and he just happens to write them down and then design a game.
And in both of those games, you know, he's got it down to like 2 hours or less,
yeah.
You know, which is
115 minutes in the case of Scythe.
Says
right. It on the box.
Yeah. That's right. You know, which is the biggest complaint with a lot of Euro games is they just take a bit longer. So, congratulations to him. The Essential Edition. I remember. I'm sure when I played it years and years ago, I think I played with a bit of the Tuscany expansion in there because it's sort of it is one of those expansions where you can add different bits and it does give you a lot of variety. But just with this Essential Edition, there's a lot of gameplay in it, that's for sure.
Exactly. During this conversation, you could have had possibly half a game of it already.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's it. That's our little chat about viticulture. We're going to throw to a song, and then we're going to talk about Gen Con. Is that right, Leon?
Indeed we are.
Awesome. Where the Dice Men Cometh, this is Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Quit it! Quit it, guys. Just quit
no,
it.
I don't
okay?
want it.
That was The Cruel Sea here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We've hit it and quit it. That is not what we're going to do with our board games. We never hit them and we certainly won't quit them. Now,
that
Leon?
Untect, yeah. With Untect, we hit it.
Oh, yeah.
What about Terror?
And the special cane in Tuscany for the grandfather thing.
Oh, yeah. Terror in Meeple City.
Hey, no, come and get out of bed. Time to get to the vineyard.
Hey, I hope we haven't offended any of our Italian listeners. Sorry if we had.
Or Watto.
Send emails to Mark.
Leon.
Yes.
I bet I know where you wish you were.
What? Where?
Well, bed. But apart from that, the other place.
Oh, yes, Gen Con.
Indianapolis.
Yes, in the Americas, where we have lots of friends there at the moment.
Damn,
and they're playing lots of stuff and putting up lots of stuff on social media, which we love to see. No. It's not driving us crazy at all.
No.
But before we get into that, we have had a text in from Marjorie from Springfield here in Little Hobart saying that she's going to go get herself a dry Pinot right now. So I think you'll find, lads, that you don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, so, Marjorie, long-term listener, first-time caller.
Yes, indeed. So, Gen Con. I've got a list of things from various different sources that I've looked at, games that are going to be at Gen Con. Now, they're either going to be released at Gen Con, or they've been just announced at Gen Con, or maybe they're just being demoed and kind of released and come sometime soon. Which one of these they actually are, you can Google yourself. We can't do all the bloody work for you out there, people.
Damn right.
So, anyway, so I've gathered this little list, and I'm going to say the name, then something about it, and then we're going to have a cheeky little chat.
Ooh.
So... The first game on the list is Comanauts.
Yes.
Stuffed Fables for Adults.
It sure is.
And look, I was very excited to see that email come out from Plaid Hat. Not so much for Comanauts, but for the next game on the list. But it does, you're exactly right. It sounds like a Mice and Mystics or a Stuffed Fable for grown-ups. In the mind of a man who's in a coma.
Yep. And he has some sort of secret that can save the world, essentially. So it's kind of like half kind of superhero dream inception kind of thing. And the stuff, the mechanics of that game are
spot on. Yeah, it's a storytelling game. Yeah. So you don't have a board, you've got a book, and you go sort of through the recesses of his mind is how this one is working. So it's quite an interesting journey. My kids and I have played a lot of Stuffed Fables. Yeah. They love it.
We played it at the pub. We loved it as well.
So I'd be curious to see how this goes, actually.
Anyway, the next game from the same Plaid Hat is Gen 7. Ooh. It is a sci-fi game set on a massive starship colony. Think your Babylon 5 type of starship. And it is a Crossroads game.
Woo-hoo! Finally, it's here!
It's only taken them an extra how many years?
And designed by Stevie Nicks of Fleetwood Mac.
Ah, lovely.
just Steve Nicks.
Sorry. Good on you, Stevie. So, obviously, Dead of Winter uses the Crossroads system, something they came up with years ago, and then they promised, we're going to have heaps of games like this, and we all went, good, bring us more, because Dead of Winter is awesome. And then they sat on the idea for a long, 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 long time, and it's finally here. Gen 7 is on the way.
And look, if it's something that Plaid Hat do well, it is games with narrative, with story, with theme. They haven't done a science fiction themed. I'm really excited later in the year I'm getting Nemesis, which is sort of like the board game with minis, sort of like Alien, the movie. This is not quite that, but, you know, the Crossroads cards where sometimes they trigger, sometimes they don't, and they all bring a little bit more of the story on.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this.
So am I, but I'm also really curious because it obviously references Dead of Winter being the first Crossroads game, but it then says that it's a playtime of 30 to 45 minutes, so it must be somewhat different.
Yeah.
Because you don't play Dead of Winter in 30 to 45 minutes.
No.
So I'll be interested to see how it all works, because so far I've seen a picture of a box and then a picture of some cards out of the box. So it looks nowhere near as table hoggy as Dead of Winter. But I'll be curious to see how this progresses. And to be honest, I don't know Steve Nicks, the designer, so I don't know what they have done before.
Interesting. There you go. Either way, next on the list is Gizmo.
Ah, yes.
Phil Walker Harding, a good friend of ours.
Yes.
And has lots of colourful balls in it. Discuss.
It sure does. Well, they're not balls, they're energy balls.
Marbles.
Well, no, they're physically marbles, but they represent energy.
Right.
So you're going to be basically building competing devices to use energy, and the energy will then, depending on the device you've built, give you victory points.
And then there's lots of cards that you play, which then give you little
more victory
ball
points.
Victory combo thingies that you can do with your balls. And
yeah, so the gimmick, I guess, of this one is that you've got a big energy collection thingamabob, which is a box full of marbles.
A marble machine.
And kind of like, not kind of like, but somewhat similar to Potion Explosion, I guess. You've got the marbles coming out in a particular order, which could be completely random, and you will be taking marbles that are available to you, which then triggers the device that you've got. And it's one of those ones where, from reading about it, it's going to start off simple because you haven't got many decisions to make. But as you upgrade your device, the combinations and the permutations become a little bit more interesting. It sort of ramps up as the game progresses.
And when I heard about this one and the fact that it was Phil Walker Harding, an amazing Aussie game designer, you just don't connect Phil Walker Harding and Marble Machine.
Or Cool Mini or not.
Yeah.
Necessarily. So it's an interesting sort of hybrid. It's great. I mean, obviously, for Phil, you would think that that's a fantastic partnership because Simon Games is a behemoth in this industry. So there was a photo of Phil and Eric Lang not too long ago. So he's in with some bigwigs there.
And this I've already seen this being played by several different people and positive words all around. So it looks like the Harding boys have done it yet again.
There you go. So you'll be able to buy it at Gen Con. I think it's slated for release at the end of August as well.
Yes, and another one that has come out already now that you can get your hands on from Yellow Games, another one of our favourites, is the game Raids, which is simply, I've put down here, Matt Dunstan, Vikings.
Correct. Well, it's also Brett Gilbert, which is sort of a collaborator of Matt Dunstan's.
Is it, though?
Well, I better check. I thought
this was a Matt by himself, because he did mention it to me. in my interview that I haven't put out yet. I think
it's going alleged
to be
interview.
Put out in a few days.
Either way, it's exciting. Either way, discuss this game. It's yellow, it looks good, it's Vikings, and Matt Dunstan's behind it.
I was wrong. It is also Brett Gilbert. Hello, Brett.
Well, there you go.
Listening?
So, look, it is, and I watched a little video on this one the other day when you sneaked a bit of a mention about what you were going to talk about, and it's played out over 4 years.
Yep.
You've got a Viking ship, and it's going round and round and round, I guess, this sort of ocean layout, and at each point you can either do some interaction with that particular town, or you can choose to keep going, and you're in essence making your Viking ship stronger and stronger with more Vikings on it. The strength of your ship means you can take on bigger and badder things, which get you more points. It looks pretty simple, I must say. It looks great, because yellow games do make really good-looking games. Looks pretty light, though.
Oh, yeah. So it's not going to be a world breaker, I don't think, but it looks cool enough.
It does. Ages 10 plus, that says light, of course.
And there's no Viking games out these days as well.
No, none.
Funnily enough, the next two games on my need-to-play list sitting at home are two Viking games. So you'll be hearing about them sometime soon. The next on the list.
On this interview that Mark hasn't released yet, but may, apparently Matt Dunson's pretty busy boy, eh?
He's very busy. He won't be at Gen Con, though. He was very jealous. Not of us, because we're not there.
Yeah, cool. So the next game in a series that I'm a big fan of, and I own the first two, which is now Forbidden Sky.
Yes.
So the sequel, well, kind of sequel, it's the same series, from Forbidden Island, which is good, to Forbidden Desert, which is also good. Now you got Forbidden Sky, which apparently, kind of like Island to Desert, was one step further on the complexity chart. Apparently Sky is another step further on the complexity chart. So not difficult at all. These are family games. You can happily play. They are Kids Pandemic is basically what this series is, and this is just another entry in it, and Matt Leacock can't really do wrong these days, and he's taken quite a while. People thought they were going to pump these out pretty quickly because there wasn't a lot of time between the first two games, but he's taken his time to get to this. He's probably been doing some other games in the meantime, but who really knows about them?
It
looks good. It's got cool little components and whatnot, and
a giant rocket ship, apparently.
Yeah.
And this is Game Right Games. So Game Right Games always produce really great quality kids games. I mean, you look at the little first tin of Sushi Go and then Sushi Go Party.
Yep.
Obviously, again, Phil Walker Harding. This will be a hit. Yep. It'll be one of those games that not only appears in your hardcore game shops, but will probably be in, at least in the Northern Hemisphere,
Walmart,
your Targets
and
all
like
of that, and in our sort of educational style shops.
Also, something I'm going to have a quick old man whinge about is that people complain a lot about the Forbidden Island and Desert games, that they're in those tins.
Oh, yeah.
So they don't fit great on your board game shelf with all the other stuff. But I've got those games, and they sit on a nice shelf with my Machikoro tin, and I like the tins. And now this new Forbidden Sky is just a normal everyday board game that doesn't have a tin.
No tin?
No, it's just a box. It's just a normal everyday box.
Maybe they'll bring out a tin edition later.
Well, they will bring a triple edition, I reckon.
Yes. Anyway.
Play it legacy style.
Next game, we don't have to talk about it that much because I'm sure it's probably coming to, I don't know if it's actually coming to Kickstarter or not, which is from the Tiny Epic series.
Yes.
Tiny Epic Mechs.
It is definitely 100% coming to Kickstarter.
Shocking.
Because I watched the Kickstarter preview video of it that is on YouTube already.
Yes.
So did I see this has got
mechs? It's a meeples.
Where your meeple sits in a mech even?
Yes.
Something to that effect, yes. Yes, there's mechs all over the place and little meeples. And it's a programming game, kind of similar to Mechs and Minions, funnily enough. But this is a player versus player game where you're going against your friends. It's not a co-op. So, you know, these games do very well. They're not everybody's cup of tea. Some of them are kind of a bit hit and miss.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, they will definitely raise the money they need.
Hey, while you're mentioning a mech game that's player versus player, did you see, because I don't think I saw it on your list, something called Critical Mass, which is also a player versus player mech game where you've got like a board in front of you that is like your mech control board, and you play cards and you use dice to basically attack the other mech player. This is coming out.
It's a Dice Tower Essential, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Arcane Wonders, one of the new Dice Tower Essentials, and there's a couple of them. I think there's you basically get sort of two mechs in one box, and then in the other one you get two mechs, and then you're playing one versus one, so you can mix them up. Did remind me a lot of, what's that movie with the big mechy things?
The Hugh
Pacific
Jackman
Rim.
One?
No, Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim. Oh,
you know, with the visuals of the mech, they look very much like that. And there's like a Japanese-themed mech, and there's a Russian-themed mech.
It sounds a bit like GKR Heavy Hitters that came out on Kickstarter not too long ago from Weta Studios in New Zealand.
Yeah, I don't know. But this one looks interesting. Critical Mass.
Well, there you go. So, next we've got Everdell.
Ah, oh, yeah.
Which we have talked about on a certain car journey on the way back from a certain board game convention, which we're not allowed to mention this week.
it's my Starling Games.
Yes, indeed. It's a Tableau and worker placement game. That's all I've got, because you can Google it yourself and go, ooh.
It is very, very pretty. It's got this 3D tree, which, you know, is functional because the trunk of the tree is where you store some cards, and it's got a couple of layers of branches where you can put other cards and do things. And this is basically you're building, I guess, deck building or tableau building, as you say, but you're woodland creatures.
Yes.
And you are badgers and porcupines and all that kind of stuff. But it is, I thought, really, really light. But from reading about it, it's a little bit more involved and a little bit more thinky than I was expecting.
The art sort of is a bit deceptive. And I think a lot of us, I know we did when we sort of briefly discussed it on Kickstarter, we're probably thinking, oh, yeah, it's not really a game for us, but it seems to have a lot more depth. But the beautiful artwork of Dan May, our good friend, who travelled in the car with us from Bordergon, who knew's over. I saw in Gen Con, I saw a photo with him and Ella together. Lucky buggers.
So, yeah, Starling Games, it's really, Everdell is also super hot on all the bloody board game websites at the moment in terms of Facebook groups. It's all, look at what's arrived, and here it is, it's so pretty, and oh my God, I want to get a copy.
Yeah, damn those people. Anyway, next up on the list, now I have to be quick with these, we'll have to do some quick fire and render that because we're running out of time. Tower of Madness.
Yes.
Lovecraftian Cthulhu Kaplunk.
That's exactly what it is. It is a tower with tentacles coming out of it.
Yeah.
And the tower is full of marbles, and every time you remove a tentacle, marbles fall, and you want the right marbles to fall, not the insane marbles.
Yeah.
Because you need certain colours of marbles to be successful, but you don't need so many of the bad marbles to turn insane.
Yeah.
Basically. That's about the game.
And if you're going to own a copy of Kaplunk, it might as well have tentacles.
Correct. Right, so it does look cool. Looks so stupid.
Yep.
Sorry. Probably plays pretty stupid. But looks really cool.
All right, I will just do. I will quick fire the rest of them.
We
don't have time for your silly old comments. So, Rise of Tribes, area control game, lots of dice.
Yes, that's true.
Yes. DC Spyfall, which of course I will buy. You have the Harley Quinn player, which acts kind of like a minion from like the werewolf game, that she's trying to give hints to the old Joker as to where they are, but then people could guess you're Harley Quinn trying to help the Joker, and then they fail. And you know, DC Comics are always good. And there's a whole Joker deck, so everyone could go, haha, we're all the Joker, we're all the spy, which we actually did at Bordercon, but it wasn't a part of the game. We were just that stupid, and it was 12 o'clock at night.
Correct. So you will get that, I dare say.
Yeah. Pantone, which is a game kind of like Pictionary, but you're using different colours.
Yeah, okay. That sounds intriguing.
Yeah. I'd like to see how it actually works in practice.
Especially for colourblind people.
Well, they probably won't be playing it, but a lot of they can play most games. Not Five Tribes as well, by the way. They're not very good at that. Good Critters.
Yeah.
Animal gangsters pulling off cons and splitting the loot.
And it sounds really, really simple because it is, again, another game in the Dice Tower Essentials line from Arcane Wonders.
Yep.
Yeah, it's quite simple. One player is the boss. They draw some cards, which are all loot cards, and simply they just divide the loot up amongst the players.
Yeah.
Now, how they choose to divide it up is completely up to the boss. And then everyone's got a deck of cards, which are yes and no and little effects that'll change things. And it's simple. Yeah. I would actually like to give this a go. It's a re-implementation of some game. I can't remember.
Yeah, I was going to say it sounds familiar. Hey, Leon, did you have on your list there Detective?
No, because I thought we'd talk about it soon anyway, because I'm definitely going to buy it.
Yes. Check. Oh, yeah. Well, for me, just the fascinating thing of, at some stage, you have to go off, look at actual historical events on a website.
Yeah.
And then you get clues from that bring you back to the crime.
God, I want this to be good.
Yeah.
Because a true crossover for board game, plus using not even real life websites and in real life information, but my understanding is there's dedicated websites that have been created to go in conjunction with
this. And it sounds very much like, sort of like, almost like a, not real time version, but there is a time limit involved if you've only got certain hours in the day to solve the crime. A combination of the Sherlock Holmes sort of mechanic where you're looking at various different references and bringing the clues together, but then you've got limited time to solve the crime. But then apparently there's some clues or some information you find out in one case that then carry on to the second case. So it sort of has this, not legacy, but this persistent world for all the, I think there's five cases that come in.
Which is the same as the Sherlock Holmes detective with the newspaper articles. Correct. And stuff. You find clues from the other one. Right. Expansions. I've got five of them to quickly rattle off. Size, Scythe. Scythe.
Yep.
Rise of Fenris. So the final expansion for that game. Everyone's really looking forward to that.
Yeah, and an eight-player legacy game.
Campaign. That's where it. Where it's not legacy in terms of tearing up things and stickers, but, yeah, persistent world where whatever you do in one mission then carries on to the next mission.
And eight games is manageable.
Yeah.
Because they're only 115 minutes a game.
Exactly. A new King of Tokyo monster, Anubis, the Egyptian god, and that adds the Die of Fate, which you can use in the game. But the cool thing about I like about this is that you don't need to use the Anubis character to play with the Die of Fate if you don't want to.
Oh, okay.
Which is a nice thing. Same as the last expansion had King Kong, and you could use the Tokyo Tower or the Empire State Building, which you don't need to use that King Kong player to play. You could just use that if you wanted to make a bit more fun.
Awesome.
King slash Queen Domino, because this expansion works with both. Age of Giants adds a fifth player. New dominoes. What more do you want?
There you go.
Inish. Mark, Inish.
Yeah.
Damn right. Inish. Inish has got an expansion coming out. It adds a fifth player.
Love
new
it.
Lands, new ability, new everything. And one thing which I saw today, I added to the list today while at work, Arkham Horror, third edition.
Yeah.
And then I've just wrote in capitals, why? Who asked for this? They made a better game than Arkham Horror. They made a third edition of that game. It's called Eldritch Horror, and it's 10 times better. And this just made me mad because I thought, hang on, are they going to soon do an Eldritch Horror second edition? And I have to throw away all the bloody boxes that I have? That would drive me insane. So anyway, that is Gen Con, and there is also, quite literally, hundreds of other games.
Correct.
Hello everyone, sorry to interrupt, but it is your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. I just wanted to take a few seconds to remind our old listeners and to all our new that you can support the Dice Men Cometh on Patreon. You can jump over to thedicemencometh.com and there is a link sitting there on the front page. You can give as little or as much as you want every month and we are very, very appreciative. I myself do it for several different podcasts and a dollar or two comes out and I don't even notice. And I can tell you right now that if everyone listening to my voice right now only gave us a dollar every month, we would be very, very happy, lads. And every cent that you spend goes straight back into the show. We've been using it, as well as the advertising from our lovely sponsors, to go all around Australia to see you guys at every convention we can get our hands on, and hopefully we might even be doing it internationally soon, so watch this space. Also, you could jump over to redbubble.com and search for Dice Men, and you can get our logo onto all different kind of merchandise. We ourselves have them on t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups and stuff, and they're really cool, and that's another way you can support us as well. The show has grown leaps and bounds in the last year or so, and it is thanks to the effort and support of you lovely people out there. You keep giving and keep giving us material, and we will keep doing the show. So, love to all of you, and now back to the action.
Well, there you go. That was Architecture in Helsinki with... It's five!
And little piano, little ding at the end of it.
I love little dings. So... what are we going to do now? Is there any more Gen Con that we can do? I've got one or two that I wanted to mention.
Well, you could probably get them at Area 52 in a couple of months, by the way.
Well, you probably
we should just mention that because they're sponsored and we like them and give them money.
So one I like the look of was Expansity, which is your tile, sort of tile building, and then using 3D tiles to build different buildings.
Yeah.
And then also, with Aussie Connection, Kashgar.
Yeah.
So Kashgar...
Grail Games.
Grail Games... But it's coming out at Gen Con this year, which is your sort of merchant selling stuff along the Silk Road.
Well, yeah. The big one that I saw today, because obviously there's some press events happening there as we speak, from Fantasy Flight.
Who?
It's a little company. They've combined with a not very well-known game designer called Mr. Andrew Garfield. Richard Garfield.
Gotcha.
The mathematician.
Yeah, nice. It's called Keyforge. Mm-hmm. And at first I thought, Richard Breeze and his Key Games is combined with Richard Garfield. No, it's got nothing to do with Keyflower or any of those keys. It's basically a whole new non-collectible card game, a whole new universe where in a box you get a certain number of archons, where archons are a world, a god, a something, it's sort of vague, but what you do is you combine different archons together to form your deck. And because I think in the base game you get maybe 6 or 7 archons, but then they bring out these archon packs.
Archon,
where they're... where they're not boosters, so it's not random cards, but because there is going to be like 20 or more of these archons, the combinations that you then make with your deck supposedly, they use the B word, billions.
Ooh.
So, you know, they're saying they're basically reinventing the whole model of non-collectible collectible card games with this. So it's very early days. As I said, literally announced this afternoon, Keyforge by Fantasy Flight Games. The other one I had, which, look, there's been a bit of hype about it already, of course, but I think it'll see a lot of play, is the sequel to Azul Reef.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to, excuse me, it's going to be featured a lot at Gen Con.
Hang on, what's this got to do with Azul?
Well, it's the new
stained
game
glass version,
by glass. Plan B Games. Mm. No.
No,
Reef is the one with plastic bits where you...
No, I know what the game is because I've bought it already. I just knew it had nothing... I didn't have anything to do with Azul. Is it just that game with kids' version, basically?
No. So, because it's Plan B with... They've brought out this line, supposedly, of they're all four-letter games.
Ah.
That was announced before the Azul, the stained glass version. Yeah. Apparently, they were going to bring out all these games with four-letter names that had similar properties, similar abstractness, similar ease to learn.
Sounds like they should have Inish. It's four letters. Innocent. Easy to learn. Very abstract. Great game, too.
Yeah.
But anyway, they were the ones I was looking at. Hey, look, before we go, I wanted to mention... I've been playing, not the iOS version, but the Android version of Guns Shone Clever.
I bet it drops out all the time.
A one-player game of that dice game. And, look, I have got hooked.
Yeah. You're not the bloody only one. Half my board game friends on Facebook, every picture I see, all these colourful things and whatnot.
Yeah, and on Twitter, you know, people commenting about their scores now.
Yeah, what's your high score?
220 or something.
Oh, you cracked 200.
Yeah, I did. It took me a while. But, look, it's just that sort of... I mean, I liked the two-player game when I played it live, but it's a perfect app game because you can play it really quickly. All the scoring with all different scoring sheets is all obviously automatic for you.
Yep.
And then there's a whole bunch of achievements. So if you fill in all the yellow squares, you've met one achievement, or all the blue squares, or got a high number, or whatever. But, of course, you're competing with yourself to get a better score. Now, apparently, because there's a leaderboard, apparently you can score almost over 300 in this game. I don't know how.
You can't.
What's the? I think I've seen a three. Was it three something in the teens? I think.
Yeah, maybe 320 or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, we've run out of time again.
Sure has. Yeah.
I just thought I'd share that with you. It's exciting to hear about all the things that are happening in Gen Con. I'm sure over the next couple of weeks we're going to be absolutely flooded with these new releases, and hopefully I'm going to be speaking with Ella on the weekend sometime, doing an over the phone or magic computer whizzy interview.
Well, with that technological nous, you are the person to be doing it.
Yeah. That's right. With her on the ground in Gen Con to find out what's been happening.
That's going
to
be cool.
Apart from that...
Well, we've been the Dice Men Cometh. It's been Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We are thanking Area 52 as always. We are not getting on the plane to Gen Con, but we are going to go and play a game. For anyone who's in Hobart, Winter Games Fest, Friday night, Saturday and Sunday at the Lenna Valley Community Hall. It's not quite Gen Con, but there's gamers there, so that's good.
That's right. Go and give it a try. We might even see you there. Indeed. We've been the Dice Men Cometh. You've been wonderful. Have a great week.
Bye.
Booyah.
You've been listening to another episode of the Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.